And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this weekend, it was 9/11's 20th anniversary. A generation that I think, if you consider it, ranks right up there as one of the most politically regressive 20 years in American history. Of course, the greatest period of regression in American history was the period after the Civil War, the period of Jim Crow and abolition of civil rights that lasted from, 1880 to about 1960. And, of course, in the 1920s, you had the Palmer Raids and a terrible period of political repression, but I don't think that these 20 years need take a back seat to any horror that we've had in American history. We've had it all. National security state. Well, I mean, it ends up with the Republican Party becoming a fascist party. That's the, to me, the outcome of 9/11. Anyway, what do you think about 9/11? People are talking about it. To me, that's what it's all about. It ushered in one of the worst periods in American political history, and one that we have to yet get ourselves out of.
Well, the process had already begun before 9/11 internally. You know, you always hear me talk about the Lewis Powell memo and then what the Koch brothers started with their think tank strategy back in the 1970s. And that's where it was. But the Republican Party still had, some small D Democratic ways of thinking about it until really more recent things. I think Newt Gingrich in the 1990s really accelerated what you were talking about, because his idea was you win at all costs and everything else be damned. And also the demonization of the Democratic Party as illegitimate began under him. And, then you get into what happened, at 9/11. And, still Bush 44, the younger one, was still had that feeling of electoral politics behind him rather than undermining electoral politics. But and of course Dick Cheney's daughter.
Well, except for Florida.
Yeah, except for Florida. We had that. But we had the people on the Supreme Court who approved of what happened in Florida.
It happen, right? Didn't they say?
Yeah, well, it was one of the worst.
This is only for this election. There's no precedent here. Only this election. But the precedent was elections don't count.
Yeah, and that's something further. And of course, those were Reagan appointees on the court, and George H.W. Bush appointees on the court that did those things. But what's evolved over the last. And it isn't even 20 years. It really is since 2010, essentially, that the Tea Party movement is, really what the accelerant of what you were talking about. And a lot of it has to go back to race. A black man won the presidency. They can never allow that to happen again in their thinking.
Well, they don't agree with the 14th Amendment.
Right. They're going back. And again, we had the seeds of this. You had the Scalia idea, right, of originalism, which predates the 14th Amendment. And if you ever get a chance to listen to the historian Joseph Ellis talk about the fallacy of originalism, I've seen him on Book TV, C-SPAN 2, talking about these things and how fallacious it is. And he doesn't talk from a political standpoint, he talks from a historical standpoint, that, you know, all of these things seem to have coalesced.
But of course, originalism in the hands of Clarence Thomas and Scalia and these fellows, Ellis may be right that it's historically fallacious, but it's also applied with a political eye, because when it doesn't work for them, they don't apply it.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing. It's a moving target, because it is whatever they say it is at that moment.
Yeah.
Which was sort of like, you know, the Bush v. Gore in the Supreme Court. It is what we say it is in the moment, and then we're free to change it because we don't have to rely on it except when we want to rely on it. But we've really gotten to a really danger point in America where the internal threat to democracy is far greater than the external threat to safety. But, you know, but there have been commentators who have noted that that's not the way people think. You know, people are more fearful of their personal safety than for the safety of the democracy, because that's more abstract and has less personal meaning to them. And that's where we're at right now. You've got this very, very intensely motivated and empowered minority demanding that what they want prevail under all circumstances. And it's getting to the point where they've say that any other ideas or thought are illegitimate and can't be allowed to prevail, to the point where they are nullifying or trying to nullify laws or openly defying laws. They say, you know, we don't have to obey what you guys, what the law says if we don't want to.
Well, they've come up with a rationale for that. They say that the fact of majority rule doesn't mean that the majority can shove their decisions down the throats of the minority. What the hell does that mean? Majority rule means that's the rule. And if that's the rule, you're supposed to follow the rule. That's not shoving anything down your throat. That's the rule.
Yeah. well, as long as it, there are two things. Number one is there has to be a valid way of the majority being determined, and they're taking that away. And number two, there are certain, you know, inherent rights that the majority can't take away. For instance, if the majority voted for slavery, you can't. that's something. That's one thing. But they're defining things like wearing masks as being so fundamental a right, or to not vote, wear a mask, as to be in that category, and they really aren't. You know, vaccinations. People are, all these people were vaccinated when they went to school because they had to be vaccinated when they went to school. I mean, George Washington mandated vaccinations for smallpox, which was the only vaccine I think you could get at that time. The military, when they got deployed overseas, they have to take shots. I mean, you hear things about the soldiers are going to resign. You know, you can't resign. It's called AWOL if you resign from the military. And now you've got it in law enforcement or other areas where and teachers, the same thing, where public servants have decided that they don't have to serve the public interest, that they only have to serve their own interest. So you have school teachers who are saying, nope, I'm not going to get vaccinated, although there are far fewer of them. Police officers, many police officers and firefighters have saying, no, you can't make us do this. And, you know, there's going to be a point where they may wind up either being fired or resigning from their positions. You know, you've got even more extreme people where they even go beyond this. New York State, the Union for Court Security Officers in court, the courts said everybody who's in our system has to be vaccinated. And the head of the union went ahead and he published the address of the Chief Justice, two addresses that he had, as if to say, you know, this is where you can find them, boys. If some harm comes to them, it's because you can find them there. Intimidation, you know, thuggery really is what it is.
Well, I think all of it really is an outgrowth of the atmosphere that developed as a result of the passage of the Patriot Act and the passage of the resolution that empowered the president to wage endless war against terror, an impossibility in its own terms. Terror is not a national state. Terror is a political theory. You don't wage war on political theories. You organize against it in a political way. And terrorism in its actions is a police matter and not a matter for armies. And no army has ever solved the problem of preventing or interdicting terrorism. And state terrorism, of course, is a different thing altogether. The United States practices state terrorism all the time. Drone attacks are state terrorism. When the Iranian chief of staff is in Syria, and he's killed by, or in Iraq rather, and he's killed by a drone attack by the Americans, when the United States is not at war with Iran and not at war with Iraq, that's called terrorism. That's the classic definition of terrorism. Go kill people in other places to enforce that government to do your bidding, to intimidate them. That's terrorism. So on the one hand, the American government is one of the great state practitioners of terrorism. And on the other hand, the war on terror abrogated all of our civil rights at home, spread the luxuriant growth of racism at home, not only against Muslim Americans and Muslims generally, but of course against Black Americans, Jewish Americans, everybody. Racism doesn't know boundaries. We justified extreme secrecy. The courts were perverted. We have a surveillance state. There's a camera everywhere. We have racial and religious profiling. The costs of all of this are in the tens of trillions of dollars, meaning that the entire economy was pauperized to pay for this, to the great benefit of a handful of corporations that make drones and uniforms. 20 years of this. And are we any better off? Can the people of the country say they're better off because of this policy? I don't think so. I think it's horrible. The result is you have a fascist Republican Party, and you have a large segment of the American people which opposes the Constitution, not for progressive reasons, but in order to impose autocracy. I mean, if you eliminate elections, what do you replace it with?
Well, they're not going to eliminate elections. They're going to subvert elections.
Well, but that's eliminating it.
Well, yeah.
I'm talking about the reality, the form. Yeah, the form.
Yeah, the form. They're going to retain the form. Well, that's what
people who abuse their wives are still married, but that's hardly a marriage that we think of as a proper marriage.
Yeah, I mean, North Korea has elections.
Exactly.
North Korea has elections, and you know, some of this though is a failure of leadership. You know, some of this didn't have to be. If you had someone who knew, you know, how to run things, George W. Bush didn't. you know, when you talk about the Patriot Act.
Well, don't forget the Democrats voted for the Patriot Act, too.
Yeah.
Eddie Kennedy was a big supporter of the Patriot Act.
Yeah. But if you had an Al Gore, I think you would have had a different result than if you had a George Bush.
Well, unfortunately, counterfactual history doesn't count.
Understood. And one of the problems that we're having, and I've thought about this, is we're fighting asymmetric warfare here. All right? You've got a Democratic Party that believes in rules and playing by rules, and you've got a Republican Party that doesn't play by the rules and only wants to rig the rules. And the question is, the only way to defeat that may be by not playing by the rules. And so what happens? I mean, does the Democratic Party continue to play by the rules and risk losing and risk losing the democracy? Or if they don't play by the rules and they fight hard and as dirty as the Republicans, you know, then they're not, you know, how do they go around saying we're a party of rules? And it and that we have to restore the rules and the rule of law and things like that. That's a conundrum. And that's the fight that's, you know, that we're seeing emerge in the Democratic Party.
But the Republicans are at least clear about one thing. They say the rules don't work because the rules don't allow the interests of the corporations and the ultra wealthy to always be dominant. And since that's what's good for America, we've got to abrogate, change, and violate the rules that make it problematical that the corporations and their interests shall always be dominant. They're pretty open about that. Then they say, well, black people and immigrants, they don't know what's good for them because they're against the corporations. So don't let them vote.
Well, as I was saying, that's not how they appeal to their base. They appeal through what you were just saying, social issues that cover up their corporate agenda. They tell their sponsors what they're doing, and their sponsors understand what they're doing. But, you know, it still doesn't get...
But the social issues that the reactionaries are pointing to are false. They're lies. And if it's social issues that is what's doing it, then shouldn't the Democrats point to opposite social issues and really stand for them? I mean, the plain fact of the matter is people need a living wage. Everybody should have a living wage. You should not be in a position where you work your whatever you have to work and you can't live. You have to have two jobs, three jobs, two and a half jobs. Man and woman in a family have to work or the family can't live. That's insane. You shouldn't have a situation where you can get sick and die because you can't afford the copay or whatever. You have to expose the falsehood of the Republicans' appeal to so-called social issues to mask what they really stand for by putting up what working people really need and say, here it is, fellas. Would you rather have health care or would you rather spend your time chasing poor people out of wherever you want to chase them, whether they're poor immigrants or poor whatever?
Well, that's the question. Yeah, but whether that'll be enough. Because
it might not be enough to begin with, but, you know, you got to keep at it.
Well, that's you get back to long term. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the Democrats say, would you rather have a $15, wouldn't you like to have a $15 minimum wage? And people say, yeah. And they said, well, okay, you elect us. And the people say, yeah, but you're going to empower black people.
So you have to stand up against racism. If you don't want to, and so you'll say, well, you'll lose certain elections. In the beginning, you very well might. In the beginning, you very well might. But in the beginning is the beginning. Otherwise, that beginning is the continues forever.
But the problem is, and that happened after 2010 when they lost the elections, the Republicans have taken steps to make permanent their ability to win a majority, even though they may not get a majority of the vote. You know, we had the situation in Wisconsin where the Democrats overall got by far the majority of the vote and got far less legislator, you know, percentage of legislators.
Well, we have the situation in general. I mean, let's face it, the Congress, the Senate, right? The people who vote for the Democrats and the people whom the Democrats represent represent more than 40 million people more than the people the Republicans represent and who vote for the Republicans. That's just a fact. The political system is not representative of democracy. That's a fact. You might as well stand up and explain that to people. Otherwise, you'll never change it.
And as I keep saying, is that may not, well, in the certainly in the short and the medium term, it's not enough.
It's not enough in the short and the medium term to win, but you can't win in the long run without going through the short and the medium term losses.
But the other factor that we have that we didn't really have 20 years ago, or at least it wasn't as strong, is Fox so-called news, which allows people to be misinformed on a continuous basis, so that the message that you're advocating doesn't get out to the people who we need to change the system.
But it turns out that this Fox News network is fairly limited. It's a big limit, but it's fairly limited. And, you know, it's an interesting thing because young people don't watch Fox News. And they have very different ideas than the people, the older people who do watch Fox News.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Over the course of 20 years, the young people will be 20 years older. And there'll be constant young people behind them. You just got to keep reaching young people.
Well, the question is, can our democracy last for another 20 years till they get old enough?
But what's the alternative?
Well,
what's the alternative to mimic the Republicans and stand for what they stand for?
Well, the question is, as I said, do you have to fight stronger or dirtier? I mean, do you have to decide we're going to end a filibuster? We're going to change the rules? Do we things like that?
But I don't think that's fighting dirty. The filibuster, after all, that's not something that anybody dreamed up to promote democracy.
Right.
The filibuster was dreamed up, its origins was to maintain minority rule. And that's what it does. It maintains minority rule, and it maintains rule in the interests of a tiny fraction of the population against the interests of the majority of the people.
And then you got, I mean, and you still have other things as well that that you're going to have to that you're going to have to change in order to do it. And the Democrats don't seem to be willing at this point to do that.
They're not willing to do that, but then aren't they really enabling the Republicans, whom they claim to oppose, to do the very things they claim to oppose?
Yeah,
it seems to me they do.
Because they
people say you need a Stacey Abrams movement, they point to the fact that Warnock got elected, and Nassif got elected. They don't seem to point to the fact that she worked for 15 years with people in the Democratic Party boycotting her and laughing at her. When she was successful, all of a sudden, There's our Messiah. That Messiah had worked 15 years doing what you said she shouldn't do. Not you, but, you know, saying she shouldn't do. That seemed to be the shortest way to do it. That was what it took. That was the least amount of time necessary to do it.
Well, and you need leaders, as I said. And she was a leader in that.
Yep.
You know, there was, I want to mention this. There was another leader I wanted to mention. That made a sea change. You know, last week we celebrated Labor Day, and there was a labor leader who was just inducted in the Baseball Hall of Fame, Marvin Miller.
Whom nobody knows.
Who, well, baseball people do. And probably one of the three, you know, greatest agents for change in the sport in the history. You know, Jackie Robinson, you had Bill James, the statistician, and you had Marvin Miller.
And what did Miller do?
Well, he liberated the baseball players from the reserve clause.
Right.
He was, you know, he saw that it was a sham. He took it. He took it to court.
The reserve clause was a way that the owners of the teams had to prevent the players from freely negotiating contracts.
Right. Right. And it took, you know, and he, in essence, knew as a labor lawyer, and you know, the players had a choice as to whether to hire Marvin Miller or Richard Nixon. as their counsel. And their leaders make the right choice. They hired Marvin Miller, and he was able to run rings around the owners and their legal ideas, and he understood what it was really about. You know, it was interesting because he got free agency written into the contract, but he understood that total free agency would be a bad deal, because if you had everybody as a free agent every year, nobody was really free, because it diluted everybody's bargaining power. You know, you had to have some sort of graduation every year into that mix. And when he started I forget what the minimum wage was in the baseball players. It might have been $7,500. It might have been $10,000. By the time he resigned, it was well over $250,000. That's pretty good work for a person, but it also, you know,
but he was able to do it because the players were united.
Yes. And
you didn't have any particular player going off and saying, well, I'll do my own thing. I'll negotiate my own deal.
Right. Right. And, there's an example of leadership, making a difference. We have at least, you know, you talk about things. We have a president now that's gone out and he's talked about climate change and he's made proposals and he's out there, holding power on or doing things in order to protect people from COVID as opposed to his predecessor. He's running into opposition from his own, to some extent from his own party. On some of these things.
Yes, you have people like Manchin and Sinema who oppose all of this, and they oppose it with lies, because there's no way to oppose it with truth, because the truth is not on the side of the Republicans. The truth says the climate is in crisis, and you got to take emergency measures to staunch the crisis. If you don't have that approach, all of this other discussion will go by the board. Because you won't have air to breathe, water to drink. Without that, it doesn't matter, who gets to pay taxes and who doesn't get to pay taxes. Right. There'll be nobody to pay taxes.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I go, I want to mention one thing that happened this week is that Frank Scavo, the repeated Republican candidate for various offices from Old Forge, took a guilty plea for his actions on January 6th.
He was one of the organizers in the Scranton area.
Right.
He organized 3 busloads to go down on January 6th, right?
Right. And then he lied about the fact that he had invaded the Capitol.
Said he didn't go.
He said he didn't go in, except they found pictures of him in there and some of his comments on on social media. So he didn't have much of a choice. Question is, what kind of a punishment will he get? But he was a small player in this. But the words "lock him up" still ring in my ears to some extent. We'll see what happens.
Well, that was one half of the coup. Giuliani and his minions were the other half of the coup.
Yeah, and one of his partners took a guilty plea, but did not cooperate or did not sign a cooperation agreement this week. Igor Fruman. That's another story for another day.
Right, and we're done for today.
We're done for today. All right.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.